Well, thank you all very much for coming today. And I want to thank Bob and Terry for having me here. As Bob said, I'm a conservative old business guy. And I would never go and make rash statements and that type of thing. We're going to find out who I am today. And we're also going to talk about a little bit about... Oops, we lost it again. There it is. Okay. All right. We're going to talk about how I got here. I don't wear a suit very often nowadays, but for this morning I decided to dress up for you all. Just to get us all on even ground here, what I'm going to do is ask everybody to stand up, and we're going to do a little survey to see where we are. So everybody stand up, please. Yeah, I used to be a market researcher back in my old life, and so we're going to do a little market survey here. And what I'd like to do is that those of you who think the situation on this planet will continue, you know, a few ups and downs, but, you know, this is pretty much the way it is, and nothing much is going to change here in the near future, and this is pretty much it is. The people that are believing like that, just go ahead and sit down, all right? Sit down. If that's where you're from, no judgment at all. If you think this is kind of the what we got, go ahead and sit down. And nothing big is going to change. Well, that's good. All right. Well, here's a little bit more insightful one. If you think you have not had a contact experience, if you think you have not had a contact experience, no paranormal experiences, nothing about like this, then please sit down. Well, we lost a few. That's good. All right. Now, here's the next one. If you think that you are incapable of influencing what's going on this planet, if you think that we're kind of stuck and we're powerless, that we're being controlled by others, then go ahead and sit down. And no, you do not get to stand up again. Once you're down, you're down, okay? And here's another one. If you do not know why you're here at this moment in history, what are you doing on this planet? If you don't know, if you don't have a clear picture of that, then go ahead and sit down. Well, I want to congratulate the ones that are still standing, all right? This is a pretty amazing audience. Usually, we get about maybe 10% of the folks that are still standing at this point with this series of questions. Everybody go ahead and sit down now. Anyway, congratulations to those that remain standing. We're going to talk about these kinds of things this morning. We're going to talk about the fact that we are the focus of a galactic opera. And I use the word opera because I'm not sure when the fat lady's going to sing. But it's going to happen. But you know, in opera there's these beautiful moments and then there's also these severe tragedies. And I think we're going to have some of that. And then I'm going to talk about the fact that this is very personal, that it affects each one of you personally. I know it affects me, and I hope I can convince you that it affects you. I'm going to talk a lot about the larger reality. And the larger reality for me, yes, it includes extraterrestrials, but it also includes the media and the government and religion and financial and history and science and on and on. It's that 97% that they didn't tell us about as I was growing up. I spent a number of years, as Bob said, as a venture capitalist, which is really just an entrepreneur that happens to have money. My money came from a number of other investors who were kind enough to go and let me have a whole bunch of money to invest in small companies. But even before that, I got involved in some very interesting projects. This is a credit card. This is one of the very few magnetic stripe credit cards that was around in 1970, because that's when we invented these things. So I was one of the people, you can blame me for all your credit problems, okay? I was one of the people that conceived of putting this magnetic stripe on the back of credit cards. And in 1970, we built the very first one of these things we now call ATMs. We installed one of those in City National Bank in Columbus, Ohio. And, don't clap. You know, I didn't make any money out of this. I just did it because it was to be done. And then we made the first one of those swipe readers, you know, the thing that sits next to the cash register. We did one of those in 1970 also. And then if you've flown on airlines recently, they take your ticket and they put it through those readers. We made one of those about 1971. And it took about 20 years for things to really take off. And by then, I was long gone. Some of the other things that happened to me during this time when I was an entrepreneur, oh, by the way, totally unconscious. I had no relationship to any of what we're going to be talking about here a little bit later on. I was so unconscious, you know. I was working for a defense contractor in the Los Angeles area and had a girlfriend out in Palm Springs. So I went out to see her one weekend, and her folks were there. So we went over to the folks' house. We're going to go out to dinner with them. And her father calls me into the study, and I figure, oh boy, what did I do now? And so he says, come on, I got something I want to show you. And I figure, okay, sure. Anyway, he brought me in, and there on his desk was this binder. And on the front of the binder, it said, Top Secret United States Air Force Project Blue Book. Interesting. Now, I don't know whether that was one of the Project Blue Books that was given out for public consumption or whether it was truly a top secret document. But inside that document were pictures of all these saucers, all of these wonderful pictures been taken by military and civilian pilots, just page after page after page of these things. So, you know, we went out to dinner and we talked about it just a little bit. And I went back to work the next day and I forgot all about it because it wasn't within my realm of consciousness. I was unconscious. And I was at that same defense contractor working away, and about the time of the Apollo moon landing, one of my fellow employees there, because we supplied things to those black guys, you know, and he said, hey, they found a base on the backside of the moon. And I said, oh, you know, you're full of it. And I went, I went back to work, you know, just totally, totally unconscious. So that's who I was. And for a long time, I remained that way. And then in 1987, things began to change. And one day, I woke up and I was no longer the eagle with the blood on my beak, because that's what you have to do when you're in the venture capital business. You got to be tough. You got to be really with it. And so no longer had that. But my business partners went and began to see that things were changing for me. They said, hey, you're no longer tough. And so I thought back, and a few months before that, you know, there had been what I thought were some really interesting entities that had come into my room and at night. And I didn't have a real clear recollection of that. And I thought back, and well, it can't be that, you know, I don't know. But I sure kind of like this new me. So that went on, and I then call myself a believer, because I wasn't quite sure what was happening in those days. But I wound up in 1996 leaving the business world, just totally left it behind. Went back to school to get a master's in psychology, trying to figure myself out. And I was sitting down at my computer doing an academic paper one day, and all of a sudden this book began spilling out. And the book literally spilled out onto the page, onto the screen, and then onto the pages and so on. And it took about 90 days. And all of a sudden, here's this book, Trillion. And now, it took me the next 4 years of rewriting, you know, learning how to write, because I'd never done anything like that, never planned to. I had no dream of going and writing any kind of a book. So Trillion was there as of 2001. It was ready to go to the publisher. And then all of a sudden, this thing called the Disclosure Project happened. And people are familiar, I hope, with the Disclosure Project. All the witnesses that stood up in the National Press Club on May 9th, 2001, and talked about their experiences with extraterrestrials. And then that same year, I went out with Stephen Greer and did some field work. And lo and behold, nothing that I had put into the book Trillion had to be changed. Okay? I don't know where this information came from, but it's a rather amazing book. People that go and read the book have a very heartfelt connection to it. I don't understand it. A lot of people come up and say, Mark, that's the story of my life. How did you know? So at that point, I became a knower. And we're going to make a difference here as we go along today between knowing and believing. Because there are certain things we can know, and then there are certain things that are just going to be left to belief. Decimal is the second book. There was too much to put into one book, Trillion. Decimal deals with the reverse engineering, some of the black ops, and where we might be headed with some of this. And then a third book, Creating the Cosmic Paradigm, which is really kind of a summary of what we're going to be talking about today. Now, there's a website, and I would encourage you to go visit that website. It's one of the most popular websites in terms of if you're searching for information on UFO sightings. We update that website every day with the latest information from all around the world. And so you can go there and you can click on current news and you can get an update on what the latest is. You can also go and sign up for a free newsletter, which I publish whenever I feel like it, because it's free, after all. And you can get an extraterrestrial identification kit. You can get a extraterrestrial historical timeline, all free. You, of course, can buy a book if you want to. You can also sign up to be a member of the Cosmic Paradigm Network, which we will talk about a little later on.
What is the web address?
I'll give it to you. I'm going to go through some things here because I notice there's a lot of people here today that haven't been with us the whole week. And I'm not going to insult your intelligence because I know most of you know most of this. Not all of it, maybe, but most of it. And I'm going to flip through this very quickly so we get us all on the same page. Because for me, this is the obvious information that's out there. And we have the work that Zachariah Sitchin did on the Sumerian culture and all the tablets and what that meant, and talking about our ancestors going back some 450,000 years and the genetic engineering and that type of thing. And then, of course, we have the Bible, and if you read that from a historical perspective, you find out that this is probably closer to what Ezekiel saw. And then, of course, there's the pyramids, and we had a really nice talk about the pyramids and this type of thing. I believe that was on Monday. And, of course, there's pyramids all over the place. And I was down in Central America not too long ago visiting with some folks there. And, you know, that Mayan culture down there is so interesting because they don't separate between their ordinary everyday lives and the contact with spiritual extraterrestrial, so it's all integrated, and they have lived that way, of course, for thousands of years. And then, of course, we have the Hopi Indians who build the Kachina dolls, and these are representations, everybody knows, of the Kachinas, which are the entities that are in San Francisco Peak and have been there for thousands of years. Once again, keep in mind the Hopis constructed these out of the materials they had at hand to represent the ETs that came and visited them, showed them how to farm, showed them a lot of other things. This is from the 15th century. There were no hot air balloons in the 15th century, yet the artists seemed to find a reason to put something in this painting. Here's another painting, the UFO of the Madonna. In the background there you can see a skyship with a man and his dog. The earliest reports we have here in this country probably are 1897. all of the information that came out about the UFO crash in Aurora, Texas. And then there's the Battle of Los Angeles, 1942. Keep in mind, in 41 we had Pearl Harbor, and everyone was concerned in the Los Angeles of those days about the Japanese invasion. So when these craft came in and settled over downtown Los Angeles, we, of course, bombarded them with artillery shells. And this made the front page of the Los Angeles Times. Now, it didn't go anywhere else. It went nowhere else nationally. One of the more interesting things, I think, that came out of this, and this is courtesy of Ryan Wood, who spoke here yesterday, General George Marshall, who was, I think, chief of staff at that time of the Army, said, look, we have recovered two craft. They are not conventional. And he ordered an investigation going back to, 1897. So the military was well aware that something had happened at that point in time. And then people say, well, why don't they go and land on the White House lawn? Well, they came pretty close. This is early 1950s, and they came and hovered over our Capitol for a long time. And then, of course, we had the crop circles. We had those presentations yesterday, great presentations. I'm not a crop circle expert, but I know that crop circles occur all over the planet, and they are certainly inspired. Then, of course, there's the sighting over Belgium, and the trace, and the radar, and the photographs by the military. And the point I'm making here is that we have had a huge number of major sightings from all over the world, sightings that have been seen by literally thousands of people, like this one in San Jose, Costa Rica. I was down in San Jose about a year ago, interviewed by the newspapers down there. They wanted to tell me their experiences. These are the newspaper editors and the reporters. They were all telling me their experiences as they were trying to interview me. Everybody down there has experiences. And then, of course, there's a wonderful video out called The Phoenix Lights. Lots of witnesses to that. Then there's the Comita report that came out in 1999. Charles Chirac, President Chirac of France, went and assembled some of his top people, asked them to take a look at this whole extraterrestrial thing. These are the things they investigated. And they came up with some very interesting conclusions that, yes, these are of extraterrestrial origin. And, yes, there's no problem with national security. And then Georgina did a great job here of investigating Rendlesham. You know, and she spent 3 years investigating the layer after layer after layer of cover-up associated with Rendlesham. And finally, in frustration, she asked the Prime Minister, Margaret Thatcher, is there anything to this, Prime Minister? And Margaret Thatcher said, oh, but of course there is, but you can't tell the people. And then, of course, the British government came clean. There is information on the Internet which you can get, hundreds of pages of what happened at Rendlesham. And again, I make the point, not so much that you don't know about this, but think about this in the context of it's there, it's happening, a lot of people have seen it. You may not have experienced it personally, but thousands and thousands of people around the world have experienced this. This is Mexico. Happened about almost 2 years ago now. And I thought it was really interesting when I first heard about it. You know, all this ball lightning and how it was flying through the clouds like this. You know, ball lightning always does that. And 16 balls of lightning flying through the clouds. And then, of course, the government of Brazil, and we're going to, I guess, get a presentation and an update on that on Saturday. So I don't tend to focus on the phenomena so much. I'm more concerned about the implications. What does it mean that all of these sightings, all of these experiences are happening all over the world. What does it mean in terms of our media, which all of a sudden we now cannot believe because they're not being straight with us? What does it mean about our government? Not only our government, but the governments around the world who seem to be in some sort of lockstep about this, not being truthful with their people. And what does it mean for religion or economics or science? It becomes very personal, and that's what we're going to talk about from here on. This is very personal. This affects you and me and how we live our lives. This is Webster's definition of extraterrestrial. It's fine. This is the one that I prefer. I know the contact experiences I've had. You cannot tell most of the time who it is you're dealing with, what you're dealing with. You don't know whether they are humans from another planet that have come here and are partially materialized, or whether they're spirits that have decided to go and take some sort of a human form so you can see them. My experience is that you really don't know what you're dealing with. And so I will talk about extraterrestrials and celestials, and I don't tend to go and draw a line there, but put them all together. My old business background, can you see that coming through here? Nice organization chart. Yeah. You know, the extraterrestrials tell us that they don't believe in God. No, we don't believe in God. We know there is a God. We know there is a creator. And we know so much more. We don't believe, though. We've gone beyond that. We know. I really think the organization of the universe is probably something much more like this. Something that is probably beyond my comprehension at the moment. Much more fluid, certainly not an organization chart. And I think everyone here understands some of the various critters we're dealing with. Okay. This little guy, there's a story that goes along with this. I was giving a talk over in Colorado. Let's see, it's close to 2 years ago now. And after the talk, and this happens almost every time I give a talk like this, someone came up to me. This was an older gentleman. He said, I have to talk with you. Something's happened, and I have to talk with you. And so I said, okay, come on. And so we went over to the side because he wanted a little privacy. And he said, I was at my brother's cabin not too far from here, and I had a dream. And the dream was very powerful. I was supposed to go in and have a doctor's appointment this morning, and the dream said, no, don't do that. Go and come here. And so I came here, and that's my camper over there out in the parking lot. I said, okay. And he said, and then he put out a piece of paper, and he said, this is what was in my trailer this morning. And he had a little picture of a little gray guy. And he said, most loving experience I've ever had my whole life. And he said, he told me to come listen to you. I'm thinking, oh God, now what's going on? And so we talked some more, and we've become friendly, and now Arnie goes and calls me up about once a month and tells me what the latest that his little gray guys are telling him. We were down at that same place, my wife and I, about a year ago now, and we travel by a big fifth wheel trailer. We travel around the country giving talks like this, and we go in, please speak louder. Okay. I'll try to speak louder. So we travel around the country and we give talks like this, and we meet with groups of people and individuals. And We had parked our trailer and had gone off. And we came back, and so here's this little camper parked not far away. And Heidi said, "Oh, I'll bet that's Arnie." And sure enough, here comes Arnie Trent. And I said, "What are you doing here?" And he said, "What are you doing here?" And I said, "Well, you didn't know I was going to be here?" And he said, "No, I didn't know I was going to be here. I'm on my way to my brother's cabin." And he said, "Oh, by the way, they want me to tell you something." I thought, okay, here we go again. They want me to tell you that they're going to go and take some of us off the planet very soon. And they just wanted you to know that. I said, okay, all right, we'll go and we'll see what happens. But anyway, that's Arnie. And so I've had a lot of experiences like that with various people. I'm going to tell a little bit about some of my experiences at this point, some of my other experiences. I talked about Trillian and how it basically had spilled out and that I hadn't really planned on doing this. And, I've now had the privilege of meeting with 200 people or more that have had various types of contact experiences. And these are people all over the country, in fact, all over the world. They have sought me out. Once you put a website up, you get into all kinds of trouble. And I get hundreds of emails every day, and I get letters and telephone calls, and people wanting to share their contact experiences, because those of you that have had these experiences know this is a pretty lonely road once this happens. Okay. One of my contact experiences happened not too long ago as I was in the Denver airport. And the Denver airport's a nice big airport, and so I was out stretching my legs before I got on the flight and walking along and, walking along like this. And all of a sudden, I got hit with something that was so powerful. It knocked me off my feet, and I had to go sit down. And the next thing I know, they're saying, "Well, okay, we're going to tell you what we want you to do next." Now, this was not a voice in my head. This was some sort of a telepathic thing, but very powerful. And my first reaction is, okay, I can't do that. And they said, "Yes, you can. We know you can." And so we had this little conversation. It went on for about 15 minutes. And I was immobilized. I could not do anything other than sit there. I could telepathically go back and forth a little bit. And they basically outlined what I'm supposed to be doing next. And I said, "Well, I need this and this and this." And they said, "That's fine. We'll take care of that." And so that's the way this happens for me. All right? And it's happened more than once. I didn't ask for this. I was pretty happy as a venture capitalist. I was making good money and living a good life. And all of a sudden, though, here comes 1987, and I'm involved. Looking back, I'm really happy that this happened. I would not go back. I would not go and trade what I'm doing now for anything in the conventional world. I've had a number of experiences out in the field. One of the more interesting ones of these was we were out with a group one night, and all of a sudden, it was probably 10 o'clock at night, pretty dark, and I look up to the left, and something told me, it's kind of like, "Hey, look at me." And so here up to the left were these four squares, and but you can't tell at night whether it's far away and big or relatively close and small. But it's good sized, and here's these four perfect squares of light just hanging there in the sky. And so you look at those, it's like a train was passing and somebody decided to open the windows. So four squares of light. And then another time we were out, again with a group of people, we're sitting in a circle, because when you go out like this and you want to do a sky watch, you go and sit in a circle so you can cover all the different degrees, different angles. So I'm sitting there and, sitting in a nice lawn chair, comfortable, and all of a sudden, bump, bump, bump. And I look around like, okay, who's playing games here? And pretty soon, three or four people down. Bump, bump, bump. And it kind of went around the circle like that. So four or five of us got bumped that night. Don't know what that was all about. Then the next day, we were out in the circle, and it was dusk. And this beautiful hawk, very large bird, comes down, and at about 3 feet off the circle, goes and circles in back of the chairs all the way around like this and flies off.
So,
lots of strange things like that happening. All right? We've seen the ET craft approach the group. We've seen it come up close. I know the first time that happened, I was shaking from head to toe. And I think the other people were pretty excited too. So you see one of these ET craft come close. And it must have sensed that, because then we went and it backed off. Later that same week, we were out on the side of a mountain and saw a craft materialize maybe 100 yards away over here, out of the side of the mountain. Came out, lights blazing, brilliant blue. I will never forget that brilliant blue color. And the mountain didn't open up or anything like that. It simply came out to the side of a rock face like that and materialized. So I've had that opportunity to see a lot of things. I've had some contact experiences. I've had enough for me to know that this stuff is very real, and for me to go and do the kind of things I'm doing now. In terms of the people that I've had the privilege of working with, I know a man who has a clear memory of every lifetime going back to the time of ancient Egypt. Has been here over and over and over again, every lifetime, and can go and recite exactly where and who and all that type of thing. I know a young man who basically is in daily contact with these ETs or spirits or celestials. I visited him recently. We were up in Portland and visited him. And he said, I have a message for you. And I said, okay. And he said, they just want you to know that they've been taking care of the San Andreas Fault to be sure that it doesn't erupt. And I said, that's interesting. Why are you telling me? They said, I don't know. They just wanted you to know that. I have met people that have had implants. I have met a lot of people and talked with them that have had contact experiences. Some of them call them abductions. Some of them call them contact experiences. Most of the people that come to me want to share very favorable contact experiences, very benign. I also know people that have been the subjects of what they will call military ops, where they have been abducted, and they know that these are not extraterrestrials. Several people that have had contact experiences since they were very young, at the age of 2 or 3 or 4, and they remember those, and they remember being taken on board, and they still continue to this day wanting more of that. And they've developed a real relationship with those folks. I have had the privilege of meeting several people who would say they are walk-ins, and who have memories of being on other planets very clearly. They can describe all the details to me of all the training they received on this planet or that planet or that planet. So I feel very privileged to have worked with some of these people. And I continue to go and seek them out, and they seek me out. Some of the conclusions from all of this, my own experiences plus the experiences of other people, are that everybody has different kinds of experiences. These are not uniform. Everybody is unique. Now, part of that is because each of us is a unique person. And part of it is because there's a whole variety of extraterrestrials and spirits out there that are working with us. A whole range of understanding of what's going on. And this non-physical dimension is where most of this takes place. Most of the contact experiences are not physical. So I would ask you to open yourselves up to that and let that happen. Most of the things, again, that I have worked with, most of the people I've worked with, and all of my experiences have been generally uplifting. I didn't think that initially in some cases, but that has always turned out to be the case. I find it real interesting also that a lot of the information that's coming through to us comes through different people and all at the same time. And I find it really amazing that they know exactly where I am when they want to talk to me, or they talk to these other people. They know exactly where they are when they want to contact them. And all of the things like abductions and implants and hybrids and walk-ins and near-death experiences and past lives, all the stuff that I refused to admit 10 years ago before I had delved into this, I now understand they are all possible and they happen to people. And I have talked with people and commiserated with them in some cases. I want to spend just a few minutes now and see if we can summarize some of the messages that have come through. The messages are, now there's a lot of them, and I'm not going to try to cover them all, but some of the major ones are, number one, we exist at a higher dimension than you, and we slip into this third dimension when we want to communicate with you, when we want to make ourselves apparent to you, but we're much more comfortable at the higher dimensions. My wife likes to call them the higher frequencies. I'm more comfortable with dimensions. But it's the fourth dimension and higher. They come here when they care to, because this is kind of like walking through molasses for them. Probably for us too. They tell us that they seeded life here. And I'm going way, way back beyond what Zachariah Sitchin and people like that have taken from the historical records, way back, okay? Way back to where the initial life, the plant life, the animal life, and that type of thing was brought to this planet. And they tell us not only that, but the initial four races were brought here. The red, the white, the black, and the yellow. Those races were brought here intentionally. And then they talk about the fact that yes, this planet has been enslaved, and that's still going on, and we'll talk some more about that. And then they talk about the fact that they would like us to become cosmic citizens, that that's our destiny, and they're wondering when we're going to wake up and help make that happen. And then they say, yes, we know all the details of your life. We know about what's happening politically. We know what's happening financially to your world, to your country, to you individually. And we're here, and we would like to help. And then the one that's been really tough for me to understand is this business of as above, so below. If you think back to the Star Wars movies, remember everything takes place at the royal court and, you know, the emperor's palace and all this kind of stuff. Well, that is probably very close to the truth as to the way this is going, except we happen to be one of those far-off planets that's way, way down on the scale. And yet we're very important. There's a tremendous amount of effort being put forth on our behalf on this planet at this moment. Some of the other information that comes through very consistently is that we have an environmental crisis here that is of a proportion that we cannot comprehend, and that if we don't do something about it, we'll probably go and doom the planet. And then they also talk about the debilitating chemicals that we ingest, all the away from all the food preservatives and that type of thing, to this sky, which is being polluted purposely. When I was in the venture capital business, we had an investment in a small company in Phoenix, and what we were making for trying to develop at that time was a cuff that would go on a person's arm to help with bone healing. So you put this cuff, the idea was to make a cuff that would then go and help with electromagnetics. So what we proved is that by selecting the right frequencies, and we did this initially on some laboratory animals, that we could go and take, for instance, the femur bone of a baby chick, and we could make it twice normal size or half size just by the electromagnetic radiation that we had that little chick live in for a few months or a few weeks. And we were able to create osteoporosis in laboratory rats, cancer, that type of thing, all with electromagnetic radiation. Now, we eventually developed the cuff that went around people's arms, and all the major sports teams use that today to get their athletics back, their athletes back on the field. To a very great extent, go with me here now, what we have is a cuff that is worn for a half hour a day. It's powered by 2 D cells. Not much power there. And what it's doing is putting out electromagnetic radiation. We found that the electromagnetic radiation, which was the most effective at moving the calcium and the potassium and the magnesium ions across the cell wall to help that bone healing, turned out to be right around 60 cycles. Now, 60 cycles is what we live with every day. So if you sleep under an electric blanket, you probably are inducing all kinds of changes to your body. So all the stories we've heard about high power wires and that thing, they're all true. The scientific evidence is out there that proves that. And yes, it has been suppressed. And yes, all the stories about cell phones you hear are probably true. I was at Motorola for a number of years at the time we put the first cell phone system in Chicago in conjunction with AT&T. And we did a lot of experiments at that time to see what would happen with the radiation from these high-power phones. And all of that has been buried. Then, of course, there's this one up here about earth shifts. And the earth shifts are spoken of by a number of different extraterrestrials. And it's getting more frantic in recent times. They're talking about these earth shifts happening fairly soon and being of a magnitude that I can't even comprehend, or certainly I don't want to. And then they say, all right, look, we're here. We're not going to come save you. So don't expect us to show up in mass and go and fly down here, solve all your problems for you, and put you on a new track. We're here to help, but we're not going to go save you. The only way that you're going to do it is with a spiritual awakening. That's how it's going to happen. And that message comes through time after time after time. And then the final message that I want to put out today from the extraterrestrials is that these are the final days. Now, I don't know whether it's days, weeks, months, or years, but we are in that pivotal juncture of human history that we have not seen before. It hasn't happened before. This is a very special planet. Very special. A lot of attention being focused here. Let's talk for a few minutes about my perception of the current paradigm. I don't imagine it's too much different than yours. Peak oil. Everybody know about peak oil? Peak oil means that we are now using oil at record levels and that we are using more oil than we're discovering. Even the major oil companies have now begun to recognize this. This is Chevron. We're using twice as much as we're discovering. This is a little chart out of The Economist. What's interesting to me here is the blue bars. In 1960, we were using 5, okay, billion barrels per day. Now we're up at 20. So that's 4 times as much. 4 times as much. And you can see with the red lines that the shrinkage there in terms of our spare capacity is just going away. So that's the story on oil. And you heard some of that earlier this week. This is an iceberg. Looks kind of pretty. Off the coast of Greenland. This is the Dawson Ice Shelf. And you can look there to see how it's receded very, very quickly over a space of just a few months where it has been melting back. This just happens to be one spot on the Antarctic that they've been tracking. So what does this produce? The melting. The melting produces fresh water, which then gets dumped into the oceans. And that fresh water slows down the conventional currents like the Gulf Current, which means that we have all kinds of disruptions in terms of weather. And it's now been fairly well established that the intensity of the hurricanes we had this past year were due to the fact that the tropical waters did not get cooled. And they didn't get cooled because the ocean currents didn't move as fast. And we're probably going to have even more intense hurricanes this coming year. So this global warming that is causing the polar ice to melt at record levels is very real. The ETs are telling us that it's not just the normal warming of the planet, but that we are the cause. So here's the global concentration of CO2. It's just climbing. That's a pretty good indication that we're the ones. And now we have the chairman of British Petroleum. He is going around the world making speeches that we have to go and start paying attention to global warming. So we're slowly waking up. BBC. Much more so in Europe than here. In 2004, we went and destroyed 9,500 square miles of rainforest. 9,500 square miles. That's roughly the size of the state of Vermont. And that's 1 year. 20% of the people in the world wake up every day not knowing where they're going to get water to drink. 20%. This is a quote from David Ignatius, the Washington Post, talking about climate change. It's getting to be very personal. He calls it dangerous and destabilizing. And then, of course, there's the world hunger. World hunger is not going away. One child dies of hunger every 5 seconds. If we really went and considered these people our brothers and sisters, we probably would do something about it. Excellent movie, The Constant Gardener, shows what the major pharmaceutical companies are doing in Africa in terms of experimenting. And I'm sad to say that some of the experimentation we did in terms of companies that I helped finance did experiments outside the United States on drugs because there's less FDA regulation outside the U.S. It's one of the reasons I left the business. The future of food. We were also involved in genetic engineering of food back in my old career. Excellent movie. Talks about where we're going with all of this. And the fact that instead of 50,000 different varieties of potatoes, we're now down to about 6. Now, this is fiction, okay, but it shows what the capability of the state is against an individual. And, of course, there's the classic, The Matrix. So I hope we're all taking the appropriate pill this morning. Here's a history of U.S. experiments. 1950, the U.S. Navy sprays a cloud of bacteria from ships over San Francisco. And then they sent medical corpsmen in to see what the effects of spraying this bacteria over the population was. 1956, the military releases mosquitoes infected with yellow fever over Avon Park, Florida. And again, sent people in to see what the effects of doing that were. MK Research began programs to manipulate human behavior using mind-altering drugs. We're not going to talk much about mind control this morning. We could spend an hour and a half doing that alone. 1987, the Department of Defense admits that despite a treaty banning research and development of biological agents, it continues to operate research facilities at 127 facilities and universities around this country. Then my favorite is, you know, the anthrax. Remember the anthrax that got mailed out to a bunch of congressmen and some other places? They traced it back to a government lab. And, of course, you all remember all the big brouhaha when they arrested all those people and convicted them and so on. No, never happened. But yet we know that it was a government altered. These are the executive orders that are currently in effect. And I'll let you read these. To me, that's kind of chilling that all of these are current executive orders. Executive orders means order of the president, which can be put into effect at any time. And it pretty well covers the waterfront from transportation to food to aircraft and railroads and everything else. These are on the books. All they're waiting for is activation. Lots of wonderful sites out there in terms of information if you really want to know what's going on. Independent newspapers, papers outside this country, do a much better job of reporting on what I think is really going on. Even Pravda does a pretty good job. And BBC, the warmest for 1,200 years. Okay? And World Watch Institute, great source if you're really interested in what's going on. Back at the time of the colonies, it was very typical for primarily men from Europe to come here as indentured servants, which means they signed a contract when they got passage over here. They worked for a master. They basically got treated like slaves. They got paid very little. They were given just enough to survive. And then they were promised their reward in heaven. So this is our situation today. We are, I think, slaves to the system. I know I was. And I was doing pretty well. But living from paycheck to paycheck, most people that I know live that way, unless you're retired. And even then, 50% of your earnings go to one form of tax or another. Most people have little or no savings. If you're retired, you're dependent on Social Security, maybe a little bit of something out of a pension fund. But then look at what's happening to all the pension funds. And everybody I know is stressed in one form or another. And then we're all being told, well, this is as good as it gets. And we get numbed by TV, by movies and news. And most recently, we've had our personal freedoms curtailed. And the reward is we get to send our kids off to war. And, we get rewarded in heaven again. Not too different from indentured servants. Catherine Austin Fitz was the undersecretary of HUD under Bush 1. She became a whistleblower because she saw all the corruption connected with the savings and loan debacle we had a few years back. And they threw her out. So now she's become an advocate for an alternative way of looking at this reality we have. And she says the way to keep the game going is for the Federal Reserve to simply buy increasing amounts of debt issued by the U.S. government. We're going to come back and analyze a little bit of this. And for the U.S. Treasury and Congress to use the proceeds to protect insiders from the resulting inflation while squeezing everyone else. Tough talk. Let's look at the fact that our financial institutions have been hijacked. And again, with my financial background, I knew virtually none of this until I had stepped out of the business world and into this current whatever it is that I'm doing now. And now it has all become very apparent because I can look back into that old world and say, I never knew. I didn't understand. So the Federal Reserve is privately owned. It's not a government institution. It was created in 1913 by a group of bankers and sold to the government as a way of, we'll help you out. The Federal Reserve holds the national debt. Now, what happens is when Congress decides it wants to spend money it doesn't have, it sends the Treasury down the street to the Federal Reserve, and they say, hey, we need a couple billion. Could you do that? And the Federal Reserve says, sure, no problem. It writes a check for a couple billion dollars, gives it to the Treasury, and it creates, what do we have on the back of our money? Federal Reserve notes. These are promises to pay to the Federal Reserve. All of our money is like that. So we now have what's known as a fiat currency. The income tax that you and I pay, a very large portion of that is paid to service the national debt. Now go with me here. We're servicing the national debt, but the national debt is held by the Federal Reserve, which in turn is privately owned. You like that? Fiat currency means that there's no backing behind our money. Yeah, we went off the gold standard and all that several years ago, as did every other country in the world. There are no countries now that have any backing of any substance behind their money. They're all allowed to float. There is $2,000 billion, $2 trillion that's held in the treasury of other countries like China and Japan, Great Britain. Almost every country uses dollars in its treasury, but those dollars were created by the Federal Reserve. Catherine Austin Fitz has tracked $3.3 trillion that's missing because, you see, we never audit the federal expenditures. We never have an accounting reconciliation of where all this money goes. You know, say they've come up with some of this recently over there in Iraq. Well, we have a bunch of money we can't account for. But we don't know where it went. You know, it's gone. And we do that. The entire federal budget is not subject to audit. Yes, we have the Government Accounting Office, the GAO, but it doesn't really produce an audit, a reconciliation of where all the money is. So from my standpoint, I have very reluctantly come to believe that, yes, there is an elite group of people in control of our financial world, and I suspect that's true elsewhere. And this has been going on for several centuries, maybe thousands of years. And I don't happen to think they're smart enough to do it all by themselves. So again, even more reluctantly, and I come to this very, very hard for me to accept because of my background, I thought I understood the financial world. I don't. I didn't. I'm beginning to understand it now. So I say, all right, there's some off-planet assistance going on here. So to me, this is a great big wake-up call. It's a wake-up call for me and for you. You know, we have an oil-based civilization, petroleum-based, if you will. We're burning hydrocarbons. We would not be sitting here today. We wouldn't have gotten here because we use oil to get us here. These spotlights that are shining on me are probably generated with either coal or petroleum. There's a little bit of hydro in this country, not a lot. All of our food is raised using petrochemicals. The farmers go and use a tremendous amount of energy raising food and transporting it. Most of our food comes from an average of 1,500 miles away. 1,500 miles. So we have an oil-based civilization, and I think if you really begin to look at it, you'll see just how dependent we are on it. So it gets better. So we now have put money creation in private hands. We have mind control. That's what I call television and media and all that type of thing. We have a medical establishment that basically is owned by the pharmaceutical companies, and they have degenerated into pill pushers. We have a legal system, which if you really begin to look at it, is stacked in unbelievable ways. We have an educational system, which really educates the young people as docile workers, not to think for themselves. And then we have a religion which goes and kind of plasters over everything to make us feel good. And on top of that, we have environmental shifts that are occurring. The environment is changing. We have tsunamis. We have the hurricanes. We have abnormal weather almost everywhere around the planet at this point in time. And we are getting Earth shifts. They're forecasted. This, I think the tsunami was probably just a wake-up call. We have several volcanoes that are becoming active, both in Alaska and Central America. And then on top of that, we have extraterrestrials and celestials that are poking in all over the place. Now, if that isn't a wake-up call, I don't know what is. So this is becoming, for me, very personal, and I hope it is for you too. We are buying the lies about the larger reality. We're buying into this. Each one of us buys it every day. We are allowing the environment to collapse. You and me, we're the ones that are doing that. And we are allowing ourselves to be treated like indentured servants. Now, as I was putting this presentation together, I was told that I had to put this slide in. And I've given this talk three or four times now, and I cannot get this slide out of here. What this slide is all about is a challenge to you to embrace the unthinkable. Maybe the kind of stuff I'm standing up here talking about is what's unthinkable for you. Maybe the reality of extraterrestrial contact is what's unthinkable for you. And I've tried to change the words to various combinations, and they basically won't let me do that. So embrace the unthinkable, whatever that means for you. This is very real. It's here and now in our faces. And this is the moment. Now, yes, there is an answer. We are in a hell of a bind, but there is a way through all of this. So let's see where we go. This is a very famous quotation from Einstein. I think you've all seen it before. but it's never been truer. We are told by the ETs that we cannot go and approach this in third-dimensional terms. It is probably fruitless to go and knock heads against the establishment. So let's see how else we can do it. The first piece of this is to understand who we are, to understand that we have genetic memory going back for thousands of years. Second piece is, and this is one that I learned a number of years ago, is that I'm basically a non-physical form incarnated into this body, that I kind of like a costume that I do for 75 years or so. This has been a harder one. And again, all these things, you know, coming from this conservative business guy, it has been a real struggle to get a hold of all these things. The most recent example of this is I have been plagued for 30-some years with very bad stomach problems. I've taken medication, prescription medication, every day. And now a wonderful woman that I've run into recently has shown me that by doing a certain type of energy work, okay, she can go and I don't have to take that prescription medication anymore. I've been without it for a month. So the way in which she worked on me was to show me that this body of mine is merely an energy projection, and to show me how to go and change that projection. Really wonderful stuff. Really brought it home to me. So this non-physical thing I'm talking about has a lot of different names. We're going to call it the divinity fragment. And I have come to understand that I chose to be here at this moment in time, at this place, and I chose to play this particular role. I chose this. Now, if you want to go and get very philosophical about this, everybody else chose it too, right? You and me and everybody else in the world. So the people we love to hate chose it also, and they knew what they were getting into. And then if I chose that, I'm choosing my experiences. I'm choosing my experiences every day. And then go one step further with me. I helped to create the actual stage, not this stage, the big stage, all right, upon which all of this great drama is being played. And you step back from that and say, hey, gee, I'm pretty good. I get to help create the stage. I get to create the role I get to play. I get to choose it. And maybe I get to create the script. And if I don't like the script, I can change the script. So what we're going to talk about now is changing the script. We have some good hints that all of this is possible. Dr. Emoto, with his book here, Messages from Water, proved that you can go and change the crystalline structure of frozen water by your thoughts. If you think peace, or if you think anger or fear versus love, you will change the actual physical structure of this frozen water. Excellent book. If you haven't seen this movie, go see it, because it shows you that your thoughts, your mere thoughts, can change physical reality. That's what this movie is all about. Quantum physics. So this divinity fragment has incarnated here a number of times. A number of times. I told you about this one man who goes back for 4,000 years of incarnations. And I think we've all been doing that for a long time. Maybe not that much. Maybe not that long. But we've been here before. And then you stop and think about the fact that in the higher dimensions, there is no time. And you realize that all these incarnations are taking place at the same time. So we're here playing these roles simultaneously. I still haven't gotten my hand around that one. So knowing all of this, knowing how powerful we are, that we get to create the stage and we get to do the script and all that, why don't we do all this? Well, the first thing is that we undergo 3D shock. So when we drop into these bodies, we have, it's like these high spirits that we really are dropping in here, and we get to go and walk through this very slow molasses kind of stuff called 3D. And then we get domesticated. Isn't that what we do to our kids? We domesticate them. Kind of like dogs, cats, and so on. Pets. We tell them right and wrong, and we reward them, and so on. So we domesticate them. And after we domesticate them, then we conform them. Anybody know an angry teenager? Okay, yeah. Those angry teenagers probably recognize the fact that they're being conformed, and they really don't like it very much. They're probably a whole lot smarter than the people that are doing the conforming. And then we develop a belief system. And that belief system leads us to a box. And it's not only our parents that are putting us in the box. It's a lot of other influences. The government, the economy, and so on and so on. So again, back to this divinity fragment of who I really am. I chose this. I chose it knowing what I was getting into, to help evolve my soul. Now, one of the things I learned when I was a venture capitalist is that there are these wonderful things, human beings called entrepreneurs, and they have this intensity. Okay, they conceive of an idea and they think about it and they go out and they create these companies, and they do it through sheer force of will. Beautiful, absolutely beautiful to watch this happen, because nothing gets in their way. You do the same thing. Every time you go in the kitchen to make something, you think about what you're going to do, you decide you're going to make a cake, and you do it, and you put it together. So this is the process. We do this every day. We are extraordinarily powerful. And I contend that a few dedicated people can change this world. Some interesting experiments that have been done recently with synchronized intention. So, do we have an awakening? We talked about the devolution, and we talked a little bit about self-determination. So, where are you? Almost everybody understands that something is wrong. Almost everybody has got that picture at this point in time. There are some people that actually raise to thinking we can solve it politically. And then it looks like the majority of you understand that there's a larger reality. And then a very few of you that I've talked to are actually doing something. So ask yourself, where are you? Lots of wonderful resources out there in terms of websites, wonderful places to go to understand this larger reality. So you can change this box you've been put in by knowing the larger reality, by accepting who you really are. And the larger reality all of a sudden changes because this divinity fragment comes into play. We are the major influence in terms of the larger reality, you and me. I see a new paradigm, and that new paradigm includes knowledge of the larger reality. It also includes unlimited free energy. We know that's possible. It includes unlimited wealth, which we all would have, incidentally, if we were not going and giving all of our money, 52% of it, okay, to a private institution called the Federal Reserve, and so on and on. This is a wonderful paradigm, and I think we can do it. But the first thing we have to do is learn how to be sustainable. And that personal sustainability comes from making of yourselves the best that you can be. It comes from going and taking care of yourselves financially. It comes from having a life mission statement, figuring out why you're here. It comes from being at peace with everybody so that they're not sucking your energy. And it comes from having a relationship with the Creator, however you want to do that. It comes from waking up. That's how we're going to go and make this transformation happen the way we want it to happen. And it calls for taking responsibility, not going like this, but taking it here. Personal responsibility. And embracing your power. You are incredibly beautiful, powerful individuals. Embrace your power. Don't go and let them lie to you. Don't let them steal your power. And then hold the vision of what it is that you think we can make of this place. We can go and turn this planet into a veritable paradise. A loving observer. We're being told by the ETs that we need to take an observer role. Not to go like this. But with quantum physics, we can affect the outcome of things by simply observing it. And then if we go and observe it in a loving fashion, we can go and change it, all of it. And last but not least, be a living example. You know, it's really easy to do. You don't have to get up here on the stage like I'm doing and make a fool out of yourself. You don't have to do that. All you have to do is live your life as an example. So I believe that we can evolve the human presence here on this planet. The Cosmic Paradigm Network, if you will go to the website cosmicparadigm.com, you can join the network. There are several hundred of us that are committed now to making this transformation happen. cosmicparadigm.com. And I think old John Wayne had a way of saying things. Okay? Saddle up. And last but not least, here is the invitation. I hope you all will take it. Thank you very much.